Hello, my name is Claire Christian. I'm standing for Douglas South election.
And Claire, you first stood in the by-election in August last year. So you've had, what, about sort of 9 months or so in the job. And I just wonder, first of all, how it's lived up to your expectations.
It's been amazing. And I'm really humbled by working with actually really fantastic people. It's not been an easy task, I can honestly say that. But I've really, really hit the ground running. And I hope that I've lived up to my expectations for the Douglas South constituency.
I mean, it was something of a career change, wasn't it? Because you had a long career in the fashion industry. You were also a teacher for a time in Northumberland as well, secondary school teacher, I think. What was it that made you want to make that leap?
Well, actually, yes, you're absolutely right. I have had a long career in the fashion industry, but it was the 2 years and serving public service as a teacher that I absolutely loved. So obviously, when the lockdown happened, the original lockdown happened, and I helped businesses and local people and self-employed people as a conduit with government, and it really introduced me to making a difference and really helping people understand the myriad of government services and etc. And it was just really, really fantastic. So I took that step. I didn't know I was going to do it when I started helping people, but I really, really love what I do now. It's the best thing I've done, Beth. Thank you.
Well, let's talk a little bit more about that help, because you do describe yourself as a self-employed people's champion, local business owner. So I guess know firsthand the sort of issues that might need championing. What is it that self-employed people particularly, would you say, have been missing out on until now?
They've been missing out on somebody actually speaking up for them. They're all individuals, and it's actually sort of coordinating and making them come together and really realising what they need. One of the things that I found during this last 9 months was self-employed people really needed education from Treasury on National Insurance 2 and National Insurance Class 4 as well. And that was something I really championed for the Treasury Department, to try and educate them so that they could access better support every time we go into a lockdown.
I suppose there might be people who think, well, if you're going to go down that line, you're going to set up your own business, surely you should make it your interest to know what's involved in that.
Absolutely. And because I've been through that process of setting up a business and filling in tax return forms, filling in your end of year forms and the company registry, because I've been through all that, I really understand what it is when you're a business and you're somebody, you have to wear many different hats. So I can really understand and emulate with those people that what they're going through.
But you can't expect government, though, Claire, to hold your hand through every stage, surely.
No, you're absolutely right. But we should be really, as government, I believe that we should go above and beyond. We should do more to help people. We shouldn't constantly be trying to say, oh, well, you should have read this and you should have explained that. But actually, we should be really far more communicative. And that's where my skill as well, in terms of the service industry, really comes into hand.
And have we done enough in that regard then, since you've been elected?
Hopefully, I've pushed that agenda a lot more, working with the Department of Enterprise and also with being in the two departments of Education and the DOI, really trying to get the DOI to try and be communicative with the general public and explain and work together with them.
A consistent issue that comes up for self-employed people, especially here in Douglas, is the cost of rent. So while we might have so many entrepreneurs over here, we're seeing very few of them on the high street, despite the empty shops that we're seeing. What can we do about that?
So actually, there's a really interesting place called Frome in Bath, which is something I've been speaking to the Department for Enterprise with. And what the government did there was they capped rates and capped rents for 10 years. I mean, that's something, an initiative that I'd really like to see for local businesses, because it's going to take a long time for the external businesses like, Dorothy Perkins, etc., to perhaps come back to the island. So we really have to push a local industry over here.
You have to have those difficult conversations with the owners of these properties, though, then.
Absolutely. But the point is that wouldn't you rather have somebody in your property regularly paying your rent rather than it be empty for years and years and years?
One of the other things you said during your by-election campaign is that you would work to create new opportunities for local employment. What have you done in that regard so far?
You're going to laugh at me, Beth, because actually me leaving my company or my business, I actually created 3 full-time roles to replace me. But further on to that, obviously, I supported the legalisation for medicinal cannabis to be produced on the island, which is going to create jobs. It's really, really important that from my perspective going forward that we look at industries like biomedical science and we look at training people and creating those job roles, almost like an industry over here on the island. And we really need to research in that and get that set up and get external support from businesses to invest in the island.
You also said in your manifesto you would introduce measures to deliver job security and job growth. Now, that is a really bold statement. And I just wonder how well maybe you understood the political process and what is actually achievable for an independent MHK before you were elected.
Yes, I mean, you've got to hold government to scrutiny. And when one of the major banks did 120 redundancies, you've got to hold them to scrutiny, the government. So it was when question time that during the House of Keys that I questioned the Department for Enterprise about what they're doing to encourage new banking sectors to come to the island. And they announced that they had given two new banking licences. So I'm constantly making sure and really looking at redundancies across the island to make sure that we try and get that job security again.
Asking questions is great for you. It gets you in the headlines, but does it actually change anything?
Do you know what, Beth? It does. And yes, you're absolutely right. It's kind of, does it? And as a backbencher, can you do much? It does. It brings things to the public eye. And I've seen some really remarkable moments where the public have got involved, like, for example, the block voting that Comyn were doing with questions. It was something that I really championed online to try and get the public to lobby their MHKs so that we could vote for this. And it was really amazing to watch the public get involved in that. And that's something I really, really enjoy.
Now, when we asked you about your priorities for the constituency of Douglas South, affordable housing came top of your list. And this is something we're seeing time and time again at the moment. I think it really is going to be a key election issue. But what can you reasonably expect to do about that?
So obviously this is being looked at by the government right now, affordable housing. Since I've been involved, obviously, within the DOI, but in a local constituency level, I've got Paul Rose and Annico and Spring Valley, which are obviously a lot of public housing. I've really seen from the other side what they need. Young families getting started on that affordable housing ladder, it's really, really difficult. And I'd like to see the government come up with initiatives. When they move to these houses, they go into them and they're an absolute shell. There's no washing machine, there's no cooker, there's no carpets. And what I'd like to see is actually something initiative from the government so that they could support and give a loan to these new starting families so that they can get that. And then it can come off their rent on a yearly basis afterwards. And we've got the reserves to do things like that, to help support and raise the quality of life for these people. And I really believe that that's something that we should look at doing.
So what then, in your opinion, would affordable look like? Have you actually looked at the figures that might be involved?
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, there are initiatives that I like in terms of affordable house. Obviously, you're looking at something that you're going to need to government perhaps to support in terms of a deposit to get them onto the ladder. This is obviously buying a property. You're really looking at a sort of £200,000 sustainable house for young people. And that's something that really we should be building and investing in and a long-term strategy. In terms of the rental market, we've got the midterm renting houses strategy right now. And I believe that is actually really, really good. So it's 20%, 25% below the market rate. And it allows people to save over the year to hopefully afford to buy their own property after that. Not everybody has the ability to stay with mum and dad, you know, but I see a lot of young people coming back here and doing that. And actually I'm hearing from a lot of parents that they want to get their children out of the house as quickly as possible and get them onto that property ladder.
So this is something that you would be happy to use what reserves we have for, but something else you've told us that if you're successful in September you'll continue to work on is to maintain and protect accessible local primary health care. Now, you did have that issue with the Snaefell surgery and Annika GPs announcing they were planning to hand back their contract. Yes. Over funding issues. You and your constituency colleague were contacted by concerned residents in the area. You pushed for a solution and in April came the news that it would stay open. So healthcare is naturally a really emotive subject, but I wonder how practical it is that government is almost held to ransom on issues like this. I mean, what else in healthcare might have to go because of money that needed to be directed to that issue, for example?
it's a good point. And obviously, when you look at the constituency for the Douglas South, you've got 5,000 constituents, and it's really, really essential that we've got the primary healthcare available. It's absolutely something the government needs to make sure is there, because ultimately, if we don't get early intervention, we're going to have a knock-on effect later on, and it's going to cost the government more. So we do have to focus on and channel our efforts in primary healthcare. And also, I'd like to see mental health in the primary healthcare as well, because that's a really major issue and something I fully support.
But there are so many issues, aren't there, Claire? And that's
there
it. And I keep saying this, and I'm sure people are getting fed up of hearing the same expression, but there is a limited amount of money. And as a national MHK, I guess you have to balance local demands against the national needs. And how do you do that?
So from my short time being in the government or in working as a parliamentarian, what I'd really like to see is a centralised government, one that focuses, and you'll probably hear a lot of people focusing on this, but what it does is it means that you centralise priorities. People will understand if you say to them, we need to prioritise mental health over your potholes this year. I'm not saying that's as clear cut as that, but we really, if we absolutely prioritise these issues and really explain it to the public and tell them that that's what our focus is, then I believe that that's what we can do.
Well, you are a member of the Department of Infrastructure currently, so you would be happy for the money to be redirected away from potholes, which again is a hot topic at the moment.
It's really been eye-opening working in the Department of Enterprise and the Education Department. What I see is departments who get given budgets to spend over the year, and if they don't spend it, then they're really nervous about not getting that budget next year. If we centralise these budgets, then what will happen is they won't be that threat. They'll just be the demand for the need. So I really hope that will work. But yeah, you're absolutely right. Working in the DOI, it's been really amazing. And if I get the opportunity now to say how, nobody says this, but there's some really, really hardworking people from across to engineers, to bus drivers, to the people that just work generally just in the offices there. They're really passionate about public service, and it's really lovely to see.
Well, interesting that you mentioned bus drivers, because within the DOI, you have responsibility for public transport. And on April the 19th, a new bus timetable was introduced. At the time, you said it was important for the timetable to adapt to provide a service that was inclusive. Understandably, when things change, some people aren't going to be happy. How much input do the people who actually use the service, who actually have knowledge of how it works for them on a day-to-day basis, how much input do they actually have when it comes to creating a new inclusive timetable?
So this is something that I'm championing right now, so accessibility and equality for all. So I've started a steering group which will deliver a new policy for bus fanning. The situation has been over this administration before I arrived, where they've been reducing services, and that's mainly been because Treasury have made cut costs for the SAVE programme. You can't maintain the same services if you're cutting costs. It's just a fact. So what we need to do in the next administration is we need to decide what our public transport means to this community. It really is a most essential part of getting people to and from work, from keeping people connected to essential services like doctor surgeries, etc. And we've got to almost ring fence that policy and make sure that we absolutely focus on those issues. I'm really passionate about public transport. I didn't think I was going to be, but I've firsthand seen how it really affects people and how people really rely on this service.
Well, some of the people who were affected were residents of Foxdale. They were so worried they called a public meeting last week as we're speaking now about the proposed replacement of some bus services through the village by demand responsive services. The commissioners say they weren't consulted before these proposals were submitted for approval to the Road Transport Licensing Committee. And I have to ask you, why not talk to the people who are actually directly affected, who know these areas before plans are put in? And this is your responsibility, Claire.
Yes, I agree. I completely agree. The definitely the demand responsive transport. It's going through the RTLC right now, so it hasn't actually come into place. So the meeting was great, and I really appreciate the parish commissioners.
You were there, were you?
I was absolutely there. Parish commissioners for giving us the opportunity to come and talk to local residents. We really, really listened, and we really, what I think the most important thing was, is the unknown for people, and it's just communicating. It comes back to what I said earlier, communicating that. And what I have promised to them is, if we are able to implement the DRT, if the RTLC approve that, if we are able to do that, I've promised them that we'll come and do the road trip and explain how they call up, how they can do it on their phone, etc. But also to go back to them in 3 or 4 months later, once it's been established, so that we can get feedback from them and how they're getting used to this new service. I think a lot of people eventually, on the other night, when they really did understand it, they saw the benefits for the DRT. So I'm really hoping that we can absolutely improve that communication, and that's something I really want to do.
Now, let's just talk briefly. We're obviously still in the midst of a global pandemic, and with regard to the support given to people here in the Isle of Man, you have been very vocal about the Manx Earnings Replacement Allowance, or MERA, and the Salary Support Scheme, both set up to offer financial assistance to those affected by the coronavirus pandemic. I just wonder, Claire, if you had been in charge of administering those schemes, what would you have done differently?
So with the salary support, one of the things that has been very difficult for businesses on the island is cash flow. And what happens is when you go into a lockdown, your cash flow basically stops, it halts. And what with businesses, they've had to wait a whole month to be able to claim the salary support. So for me, what I would have liked to have seen is maybe a tranche in between, so like a 2-week tranche where they could have done that, especially in the beginning, to really help that cash flow and to pay employees. That would have really helped businesses, and I would have liked to have seen and make that change. With regards to MERA, again, there was a delay, and I really, really did work hard to try and make that, you know, an expedient delivery to self-employed people. But it was hard. And I think in terms of, again, it's communication, it's educating, it's basically being more open and transparent. One of the frustrations that I saw daily was when a policy was changed and a support would come out, people would be scrambling onto the COVID website for the information. And that's something that I would really want to see change, so that the information is on there before it almost gets announced, or simultaneously, so that people have that to hand and can really understand it much better.
I suppose we have to accept, though, it was a very difficult situation, and it had to be reactive in some ways.
It did have to be reactive, but you've got, you know, when I see this now, you've got 24 MHKs that are all really smart people, and all you have to do is ask them the questions, what ifs, and what can we do? And they're there. We know most of the questions our constituents will ask, and that's what you can do to formulate these easy, you know, information on the COVID website.
So then, Claire Christian, we're looking ahead to September the 23rd this year, and I just wonder what it is you are promising your constituents on a local and a national level. What would you do if you're re-elected?
Thank you, Beth. So I really hope to obviously promote local primary health care and sustain that in Douglas South, and in champion excellent community education as well. And
just tell me what community education means.
So it's really important. It's really important that we work as a community to help our education system. So it's involving parents, and it's involving school children for after school. It's not just education from whatever 9:30 till 3:30. It's really making a holistic community education approach and bringing that community back and using the schools to involve that.
You've been a member of a department. How much influence then have you had in pushing that agenda forward?
One of the parts that I have managed to do is set up a breakfast club with Manor Park and Annika School, and worked with the head teacher and worked with the local supermarket as well. And it's actually going to start after the TT half term for a 6-week period as a pilot. And the idea and the concept of that is so that So that actually it benefits parents so that they've got somewhere to drop off so they can get to work. It makes the children obviously get involved in the community, not just in terms of learning, but being involved with breakfast, and gives them a really good start to the day. It also obviously raises attainability and attention when they're in the class. So these are sort of initiatives that I'm looking at, and I would love to see something like this rolled out across the island, a breakfast club that was a continuous one and the one that was supplied for all.
So a dedication to healthcare, education. Why should the people of Douglas South trust you with a vote on September the 23rd? You've got about 30 seconds.
Okay, so I have listened and I have acted and I have fixed things, and I have been that strong voice, and I hope that I've kept my promise to Douglas South constituents, and I really hope that they'll vote for me on September 23rd so that I can continue to make an impact and serve the community.
Claire Christian, thank you.
Thank you.